Welcome back to Aliyah Yomi. Today we are going to be learning Matos Shlishi, the third Aliyah in Parshas Matos. Our Aliyah is on the topic of killing the perpetrators and cleansing the vessels. Our Aliyah is 12 psukim long, running from Perek Lamed Aleph, psukim Yud Gimel to Chof Dalet. Basic summary and then some points to ponder. The summary goes as follows. Moshe, Elazar, and the leaders all come out to meet and greet the people who come back from battle, at which point Moshe gets angry at the officers and he asks them why they had left the woman alive. And he says, Hein Heinah, he looks at them and he says, these are the women, these very women you can identify were involved in the sins of leading Israel to their seduction and ultimate death at the sins of Baal Peor. At this which point, Moshe Rabbeinu commanded them to kill all male children and all women who were at the stage where they could be in a relationship. And then or those who finish all the killing are meant to wait outside of the camp for 7 days to be purified, including their vessels. We learn an interesting halacha out of here, what's called cherev harei kochalal, that if a person uses an instrument which receives tumah to kill another person in battle in this particular case, then the person, even though they don't touch the victim, they receive tumah. And so this is a lot of halachas of interesting halachas of tumah and tahara are learned out of here. Finally, Elazar then commands them and says, Zois chukas ha-Torah, this is how the law of the Torah and for purifying the vessels. And he says, God, the gold, the silver, the copper, the iron, the lead, anything which goes in fire needs to be purified in fire, anything which is not purified in fire needs to be purified in water, and the clothes need to be cleansed on the seventh day. Very enigmatic section. We'll take a look at this in just a moment. So let's consider a few of these points in more depth. Number one question is, why did the soldiers leave the women alive in the first place? Surely they recognized and understood that these women were, in fact, the ones who were the vehicle and instruments of the seduction and adultery and idolatry which followed. So the Kleiakos says, yeah, well, they knew the halacha was Moavi velo Moavis, that in fact the Moabites that were not allowed to enter into the nation of Israel, but maybe the Moabite woman would be able to enter into the nation. So perhaps they thought there was such a distinction when it came to the Midianites and the Midianitesses. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh says, well, because they thought that perhaps what happened over here was that maybe the women were sent out by their, I mean, it's such a terrible, disgusting thing to think about, but their husbands and their fathers under duress to go seduce the nation of Israel, and that was against their will. So Moshe Rabbeinu responds by saying, yes, well, that may be true about the adultery, but regarding the idolatry which they brought upon the nation of Israel, that was their free choice, and therefore they are culpable for that as well. Now, why did Moshe Rabbeinu kill young boys? That didn't seem to be the complaint that he had. So Rav Hirsch says it is in order to prevent the seed of the immoral nation entering into Israel in the future. It's all very nice. They're small children now. They grow up to be big people with the memories and the culture, and that we'll call the spiritual culture that they grow up with. They're going to marry fine Jewish girls, and it's going to create a spiritual destruction and immorality to be part of the nation of Israel. Moshe Rabbeinu was avoiding this at this point in time. We have to sometimes, and especially when we read these areas in the Torah, we sometimes have to disengage ourselves from our 21st century morality, which we've grown to, and reverse ourselves into understanding the right of conquest and how wars operated everywhere, well before this, for many, many centuries and millennia, to appreciate what's going on. But yeah, we'll try to discuss this more when we get to Sefer Dvorim. Now, why is Elazar teaching the last section of this Aliyah? So the Rashi says, because Moshe Rabbeinu got angry. When he got angry, he lost the halacha. Whenever you get angry, you forget things. Ibn Ezra says, no, the Paradumma was originally taught to Elazar HaKohen. This is the section of the Paradumma of cleansing from people who are exposed to death. And also, Moshe Rabbeinu was given the general picture. Elazar is giving the details now. And that's what the details are at the end of the Aliyah. Now, what's this business at the end of the Aliyah of purifying vessels? So the Ramban points out that whenever you purify from tumah, from impurity, you never do it by fire. There's water, there's cleansing, but there's never fire, which indicates this is not purifying from classic tumah. So rather, it actually refers to another process which we call kashering. That means to say that now they have all these vessels, they have all these, you know, plates and jugs and tableware from the Midianites, and they want to use them, but they've been used on treif food, on treif tables. So how do you get this correct? So Rashi explains, well, there's two categories. If you kasher, if it was used in direct fire, then you need direct fire to cleanse it. So if you, let's say you have a frying pan, it needs to go through the same degree of what's called libun gomor. It needs to go through a very, very high level of fire to cleanse out all the absorptions into that vessel. And if it's in water, Rashi points out, well, that means to say it's not used on the fire, then it needs tevilah. That's when you buy a vessel from a non-Jew or a new first-time vessel, you need to put a metal vessel, certainly, into the mikveh. So we learn both kashering, we call in this aliyah, and tevilah, says Rashi. The Ramban says, no, the water is not referring to tevilah. It refers to, let's say, something was cooked as opposed to roasted. So if you roast something, it's on the fire, right? So then it requires fire, libun, what we call, to cleanse it, to kasher it. But if it was cooked, let's say you have a soup pot, which was used, so really the treif is actually being cooked in it. In that case, it's used with a liquid. A liquid is sufficient. You could do what's called hag'ala, which means you can remove it through hot liquids as well. So many, many multitudes of halachas are learned out of this aliyah in Meseches Chulin, in Meseches Avodah Zarah, in Meseches Psachim, to understand what informs the laws of kashrus today. With this, we close the third aliyah. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day. Welcome back to Aliyah Yomi. Today we are going to be learning Matos Revi'i, the fourth Aliyah in Parshas Matos. Our Aliyah talks about dividing the spoils. So we've just finished the battle against Midian. Moshe Rabbeinu has just clarified about some of the laws of purifying the vessels, and now is about dividing the spoils. Our Aliyah is 17 Psukim, running from Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Chof Hei to Mem Aleph. Let's take a look at a brief summary, and then we'll look at some deeper points to ponder. So first, we have the command of Hashem to Moshe with Elazar and the other leaders to count the spoils in humans and animals. The spoils are then to be split up in half between the soldiers and the population, for the soldiers keeping half and the rest of the population keeping the other half. However, there's going to be a tax. So a tax to Hashem, which is going to be from the half that goes to the soldiers, 1/500th of it belongs to, of the people and the animals, belongs to Elazar, the Kohanim. And from the tax of the half going to the nation of Israel, 1/50th of humans and animals will go to the Levium. So this is a truma and a miser, it seems. And that's what happens. And we hear the numbers are tabulated. They managed to get from the Midianites 675,000 sheep, 72,000 cattle, 61,000 donkeys, and 32,000 human beings. These are the younger ladies who remain from the war effort. And we hear about them halving the numbers between the army and the population. And in the half that belongs to the armies, we hear about the tax of 1/500, which turns out to be 675 sheep, 72 cows, 61 donkeys, and 32 humans who are given to the Kohanim and to under the auspices of Elazar HaKohen, and that is our Aliyah. Some basic points to ponder. So why is there a tax to Hashem in this battle and not in previous battles? In Parshas Chukas, we saw that there was a battle on the east bank of the Jordan against Sihon and Og, who were Amorite nations, and there didn't seem to be this whole business about how the taxation worked for the conquest. The Ramban explains, because this was a war of vengeance of Hashem as well. This wasn't just about conquest, getting through the place. These are people who had attempted to spiritually defame the people, and they succeeded. 24,000 Jews lost their lives because of this, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu is getting vengeance. So part of that is recognizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this battle as well. Now, why do the soldiers get more per capita than the rest of the populace? So the Malbim says the question is the opposite way around. Usually, it's the people who roll up their sleeves and get into the mud and go to war who are the ones who get the spoils, and not the people back at home. What the unique nuance is here is that those who are back home even get something, because their tefillos, their prayers, were instrumental in the success in the material battle as well. Notice, by the way, as the Malbim points out, there's no preferential treatment for sergeants or any officer corps in the army. They all get the same amount. So it's not like, you know, the generals and the colonels and the majors and the captains. No, everybody gets the same. Now, why is the tax higher in the half that belongs to the army than to the population than that of the army? Okay, right? So the half that belongs to the army, only 1/500th is given to the Kohanim, and of the half that goes to the population, 1/50th is given to the Levium. So the Malbim explains the population sent 1/50th of their men. Think about that. 12,000 army-age men were sent, but they had 600,000 men, which is 1/50th. So in the same way they dedicated 1/50th of their men, they are dedicating 1/50th of the spoils, which are attributed to them as well. Then there will have to be a ma'aser min ha'ma'aser, which means that there needs to be a tenth of that goes to the Kohanim, and that's the 1/500, which is a tenth of the 50th, which goes to the Kohanim, right? So just to appreciate, there's a ma'aser of their men, there's a ma'aser of what they get, and there's also a truma, which is, so to speak, the ma'aser min ha'ma'aser going to the Kohanim over here. The Chizkuni takes us one step further, and he points out that if you look at the families of Levi, there are five families in the tribe of Levi, and of them, one half of the families of Yitzhar are actually Kohanim, which essentially means that of the Levim in population, 1/10 of the Levim are actually Kohanim at this point in time, which matches the percentages. So the Kohanim are getting 1/500, and the Levim are getting 1/50 because of the population sizes as well. So everything matches up. Now, why do we need to know the numbers of the halves? Meaning, can't we do the math ourselves? If you look, the Torah goes to such lengths to describe how this is the number of the half, and this is the number of the percentage of 1/500. Can't we do that ourselves? So the Ramban is to demonstrate that no one or no animal died during this process. It was miraculous that everything stayed the same. The Racham HaKadosh goes on to add that it's also to demonstrate that the percentage was internal and not external, meaning the 1/500 came from the full amount. What does that mean? So let's say when I talk about a quarter of a pie, it could mean one of four pieces of that pie. That's internally, or could mean 1/4 of the pie, could mean one of five pieces of the pie, so one compared to the four is a quarter of what remains. So we're saying it's internal rather than external, which is why the numbers needed to be run to demonstrate that particular point. This closes Revi'i. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day. Welcome back to Aliyah Yomi. Today we're going to be learning Matos Chamishi, the fifth Aliyah in Parshas Matos. And the topic of our Aliyah today is the tax upon the spoils of Israel. So let's go a little further, and there's a fascinating story that occurs in this Aliyah, but let's start off at the beginning. Our Aliyah is only 13 psukim long, running from Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Membeis to Nun Dalet. And we hear the following. We already heard about the half of the spoils which go to the soldiers. We now hear about the half of the spoils going to the nation of Israel, of which 1/50 is given as tax to the Levim. And we hear about the numbers of the halves. So there's of the half of sheep is 337,500 sheep, 36,000 cattle, 30,500 donkeys, and 16,000 humans. And of that, 1/50 goes to Levium. The remainder goes and distributed among the population. Then we hear about an interesting story that occurs. The leaders of the soldiers present themselves in front of Moshe. So these are the Alufim. These are the leaders of the army. And they come in front of Moshe Rabbeinu and they say, you know, we did a count of our troops and we found that no one was lost. This battle was incredible. There was not a single soldier lost. And in atonement for their lives being spared, they lay in front of them the gold found in their battle. Moshe and Elazar receive this gold. It adds up to 16,750 shekels worth, which is a significant amount of gold. And then we hear an enigmatic pasuk which says, Ansheh Tzava, Bozazu Ishloi, the men of the army, bespoiled everything for themselves. And finally, we hear that this gold is donated to the Mishkan, Lizikaron. It is going to be a memory, Livnei Yisrael, Livnei Hashem, in front of God. So a number of basic questions over here, and that is, why are the officers doing this? What's going on over here? So the most basic idea is that they realize their lives were spared, and this is obviously miraculous, because in every battle there's always casualties, even the most well-tuned battles. And so they know that they really their lives are beholden to God, and so they're offering a kapara. That's the most basic level. The Malbim actually digs a little deeper, and he quotes the Chazal saying that there's an external and an internal battle. The external battle was fought and won decisively without any casualties, but the internal war was also being fought, and the internal war is between the, we'll call it, the spiritual part and the animal part of every human being. Because the animal part is waging war and is besieging the spiritual part. The spiritual part knows what the right values in life are, and the animalistic part is just seeking for indulgence and convenience and entertainment and enjoyment. And that battle is fought in a person on a day-to-day, moment-by-moment basis. And what is being described over here is that they did a count and they saw that even in the battlefield, they spiritually succeeded. Lo nifkat ish, there was not a single person that didn't lose anything in the battle against themselves as well, which meant that although what led to the whole battle with the Midianites was people not being in control of themselves and their relationships, they themselves, when fighting this battle, were in control of themselves and their relationships and the way they conducted themselves in enemy territory, in confronting even the women or the victims of the battle. They were this was not they would not let themselves go morally as well. That's what's being described over here. The Chizkuni actually quotes the Gemara and says that what they're saying is that in action, they did not let themselves go. So they regulated themselves, they controlled how they fought this battle. It was not with levels of immorality that are usually accompanied with battle. But in thought, they felt that they struggled, and so therefore they donate the gold as a dedication, as a kapara for the thoughts that might have gone through their minds in this battle as well. That's what's being described over here. So it's very much a spiritual cleansing battle as well. It is interesting to note that Rav Hirsch points out that the things that they are dedicating are women's jewelry, right? So the gold that they're dedicating, as described here, are women's jewelry, which specifically are addressed to the sin which got them to this battle in the first place, and what they're overcoming when going into this battle as well. So this is really about fixing what got them there in the first place. Now, do the individual soldiers keep their half of it? Because it seems a little confusing. That pasuk of pasuk Nun Gimel, Anshei Atzava Bazuzu Ishloi, each person in the army kept the spoils for themselves. So the Mepharshim debate this a little bit. The Ibn Ezra says, and the Da'as HaKadim says, no, this refers to the fact that as opposed to the animals and the humans, which were divided up between the people and the soldiers, any of the vessels, you know, were actually kept by the people themselves, excluding the gold, which was donated to the Mishkan. Rav Yosef Bechor Shor says no. That means to say that it was only the officers who dedicated their gold, but the regular soldiers, the privates, were actually keeping their own gold. So it was the leaders who felt the responsibility beyond themselves who are the ones that are going out above and beyond. Now, what happens with gold in the end of the day? The Ramban explains that it was made into clay kodesh, it was made into the holy vessels, which is a remarkable thing. You see that the jewelry, which came from an immoral people, used in immoral ways, was yet able to be purified in the Mishkan itself, which is a very keen insight into how profound the process of tshuva and change can actually be, which is part of what the Zikaron is, the remembrance is, for the nation of Israel. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.